Very glad that Marcel is here. But the question that came up was, if you recall, Perek Gimel and Chavakuk, which we are going to finish very, very soon. But Perek Gimel and Chavakuk begins with the word Tfilah. Remember? Tfilah l'Chavakuk ha-Navi. And the first one to ask was Marcel, and she said, if this is Nevuah, then why is it called a Tfilah? And I immediately, if you remember, my immediate association was to Tfilat Chana, right? Because we have Vatit Palel Chana, I have the text, Vatit Palel Chana Vatomar, and that is her Nevuah. This Perek, Bet in Shmuel Aleph is her Nevuah. The Gemara in Megillah, when it gives a proof text for the fact that Chana is a Nevi'ah, that she indeed should be counted as one of the seven Nevi'ot of our people, use this Perek, Vatit Palel Chana, as the proof text. And so, if you remember, my answer was, well, it is a tefillah, but the person who is doing the tefillah gets nevuah at that time. Okay, I thought I took care of it. Then Dov last week decided to ask the question again. Look, he can't even remember. It haunts me all week. But at any rate, I decided to look it up. I decided to see, and I knew that Tfilat Chana was much more well known, and so it would be easier for me to research the Tfilat Chana. So basically, I vaguely remembered something, and I found that there's a very interesting little sefer that I used to use way back in my youth, which I know is hard to believe, but there was a youth. It was called Sheilot Le'iyun B'Nevi'im Rishonim, and it was very good for a teacher because it gave you a question to start with, and it's always good to start with, you know, so as a method of teaching is to start with a question. So basically the first question on Perek Bet in Shmuel was, Mahu Hakoshi, what is the difficulty, Bamila Vatit Palel, V'Pasuk Aleph, what is the difficulty? The case said, "Menasim haperushim abayim liyashvo." And how do the following perushim try to answer the question, to give a good answer? And so, what they're doing is the perushim, and he takes radak and mitsudot. What they're doing is trying to show that while it is a nevuah, in other words, they take for granted that it's a nevuah, we'll see, but is it also a tefillah? And Radak says, hit palala lifnei Hashem, v'natna lo shevach v'hoda'a al haben shenatan la. She was davening to Hashem and gave him shevach v'hoda'a for the son that he gave her. V'hit palala l'Hashem sheyichyeh v'yihyeh la. And she was davening that he should live and that he should belong to her, that he should really continue being her son. In other words, of course, she knew that she was going to leave him at the Mishkan. What's the question Radak is answering without really delineating? He's saying, why does it say Vatit Palel? We do not see the ingredients of Tfilah here. Because Tfilah would be, remember, Shevach, Bakasha, Hodaya. And it really did have Shevach. And he's showing Radak, what is her Bakasha, that this child should live. He's saying it's understood. And she's praising Hashem. And meanwhile, she's seeing all of these nevuot. Mitsudat said, very interesting, Etzem ha-tfilah, the essence of the part that's really tfilah, He besof amareha. It's at the end of everything that she says. Uvatchila sidra shivcho shel makom. And at the beginning, she organized the praise of the Ribbono shel Olam. V'lazeh ne'emar v'tomar. It says, and that's why it says v'tomar. Look at the text. V'titpalel chana v'tomar. Isn't that interesting? She had a tefillah, and she also said, and the saying v'tomar, didn't have to say v'titpalel v'tomar. It's telling us that it is the nevuah, and I'm going to read a little bit more to you from another source. In other words, it is tefillah. The person is doing true tefillah. She is praising Hashem, asking him that Shmuel should exist, and that all of these good things he says at the very end, he says, is really the essence of the tefillah. You remember what the end is of tefillat chana? Hashem yechatu merivav alav. Hashem, in the future, I want all those who argue and fight against you to be broken. Bashamayim yareim Hashem. Hashem roars in heaven. Yadin afsei aretz. He's in heaven, but he judges the edges of the world. So all those who fight against you through the years, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is what she's talking about, should be punished. That's her bakasha, according to Mitzudot. So, basically, again, I think I confused you. What Yaakovson was saying is there really is a question, why is this called tefillah, which is what you asked about Habakkuk. It's nevuah, why is it called tefillah? Because if you look closely, you might have to really study very closely what it is that's being said. There is formal tefillah that's going on here in the middle of the nevuah. It's definitely nevuah, but in the middle, there is tefillah that's going on. Chana is davening, first of all, she's praising Hashem, thanking him for the child, and asking that he take care of all his enemies through the years. What her nevuah was in the tefillah that she said was she saw a history of Am Yisrael unfolding before her with all the enemies that would rise that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would save the nation from. What is the tefillah of Habakkuk, on the other hand? If you remember, Habakkuk saw the future of Am Yisrael spreading out before him, that it wasn't, the Geula was not going to come at any time in the near future. And remember, he began by saying, be with them, whether it be beseter, whether it be in a hidden fashion, no overt miracles, be with them, support them. And from time to time, do an overt miracle so that they will know that you are there. And keep your promise about there being a geula at the end of days. And then we went through the rest of the parak. We did not finish the last three psukim. It's okay. We're getting there. And the last three psukim were the ones that summed up when the geula was going to happen. But the whole perek, Habakkuk went into detail about what Hashem showed him, bin nevuah, was going to be the future. Not clearly, but that there would be times that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would indeed keep Am Yisrael alive in a hidden fashion. That there would be times, remember, Vayakam, Amad, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to stand up and he's going to do things more overtly. And of course, there will be a time that the enemies will be punished, Am Yisrael will be saved, but there are going to be the sadness that we came to. There are going to be a lot of tzarot before there will be any kind of Yeshua. Mm-hmm. So one more thing that I wanted to add, Kocha shel Chana, this is about Chana, the strength of Chana b'tfilah, in tfilah, hu min hamafur samut. It is among the most well known. In other words, Chana is known for tfilah. Lo rak shenevi uta utfilata ba'u la ka'achat. It's not just that her prophecy and the tefillah came as one together. Ela hi shichlala et musag ha-tefillah ve-heviya oto l'siyim ha-chi gedolem. She actually formed the idea, she worked on the idea of tefillah and brought it to its highest highest point. In other words, she created, she so to speak, not created, polished the idea of tefillah for us. But the point that I wanted you to hear is, this is from Eliyahu Yedid that I was quoting, that she, the tefillah and the nevuah came together as a chat. And so we can, though I can't find anybody to say that about Habakkuk, we can assume that with Habakkuk, the tefillah came as the nevuah came. Because when the nevuah came, he wanted to have a personal reaction, which a Navi is supposed to have to what Hashem is showing him. A Navi is supposed to react. He's not supposed to stand there and saying, okay, check. Am Yisrael going to suffer? Okay, I'll tell them, thanks. He is supposed to have a gut reaction, and he is supposed to daven for Am Yisrael. So I think we really see it very clearly here. Whereas the Nevuah is coming, we see that the Navi, from a personal level, is davening for Am Yisrael. Okay? Now we're going to take a deep breath, okay? And we're going to, I know this is going to really get to you, we're going to finish Habakkuk. Yes, indeed. Habakkuk Paragimo. Again, Habakkuk is his tefillah, and he is also seeing what's going to happen. And we had just gotten to the point where he sees all the way, he doesn't see clearly, but he sees all the way to the end of days, when there are going to be terrible tzarot. And we read a Malbim last week that gave us the chills, it really did. Because he says it is a Kabbalah with Am Yisrael, it is a Masoret, it's a tradition, that before the time of the Goel, before the time of the Geula, there will be terrible tzarot. Chevlei Mashiach. And the worse the tzarot gets, remember, some of you reminded us of Rabbi Akiva laughing when he saw the wolf, the fox, coming out of the Beit HaMikdash. The worse the tzarot gets, the closer we know the time of the Geula is coming. And so the Navi says, when I saw this, when I saw what was going to happen, as the time for Geula would come closer, and I'm looking at Pasuk Tet Zayin 16.
Which Pasuk?
Tet Zayin. We did Tet Zayin, but we're going to start with that. Shamati. He tells us very clearly, I heard. In other words, I heard the nevuah. And remember, shamati is an active shamati. It's not just I heard, but I heard and I internalized. I heard, vatirgaz bitni, my belly. My belly shook. My belly trembled. My insides trembled. Lekol tzalalu svatai, to the sound that my lips murmured. Tzalalu is like rang, but they murmured. In other words, I heard the sounds that not only my lips, but the lips of all the tzaddikim through all the ages would be saying. It's like the murmuring lips that are saying, Chevlei Mashiach. if we're going through Tzarot, it must mean that we are coming closer and closer to the time of Mashiach. When I heard this Nevuah, he says, I went into a trembling. Remember Yirmiyahu saying, May I, Ochila. Remember Yirmiyahu crying out, I don't want to see this Nevuah, Rabbona Shalom. That's what he's doing here. I'm trembling. Yavo rakav ba'atzamai. I feel as though rot. I'm going to take a drink. It's coming into my bones. V'tachtai ergaz, and I feel that the ground is trembling under me. I feel that I can't stand straight and listen to this nevuah. Asher anuach liyom tzara. The nevuah is saying, I should rest. I should be comforted when there is a yom tzara, because I should understand what? La'alot la'am yegudenu. When the nation has a troop that rises up against them, it should make me feel, oh, Yeshua is coming. It's a good sign. It might be a terrible thing that's about to happen. It's making me tremble. But what I hear the lips murmuring is, it's a good sign. It's a sign that the Yeshua is even closer than perhaps we thought. Ki te'ena lo tifrach, you know? Even the forces of nature will operate against us. The fig is not going to blossom. Ve'en yivul bagafanim, and the vines are not going to have any produce. Ki chesh ma'aseh zayit, we're not going to be able to make oil from the olives. It's going to rebel, making the oil. Ushdemot lo asa ochel, and the beautiful fields are not going to produce food. Gozar mi michla tzon, the sheep will be cut off from their dwelling place. Ve'ein bakar barafatim, and there will not be any living cattle in the refet, in the barns. In other words, even nature will seem to be rebelling. It's not going to work. Nothing seems to work. We have enemies rising against us, and at the same time, the land is not producing. Va'ani b'ashem eloza, where pasuk yod chet, the next to last pasuk of Chavakuk. Agila b'eloke yishi. But when I see that, I will understand that in those terrible times, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving us a sign that the Mashiach, that the redemption, the Geula is going to be coming. And so I am comforting myself, and I am saying I will be happy. Aliza is a light kind of happiness. In other words, in the midst of this heaviness that's coming, I am going to be happy. I will be Gila. Gila is something new, a good, you know, good tidings is Gila. Your reaction to, wow, I didn't expect that. With the God of my salvation. Hashem Elokim Cheli. Hashem God is my strength. Vayasem Raglai Ka'ayalot. And at that time, at the time of the Yeshua, he will make my legs be like, Ayal is like a a gazelle. The reason that I like saying the gazelle, even though the translations don't, is that when you see gazelle, when you see the word gazelle in English, you think of light footedness. You think of somebody who's able to go on a precipice and stand on the tiniest ledge. And they stand, they're so sure-footed, the gazelles. And so he's saying, I am going to walk in a sure-footed. manner like a gazelle. I'll be able to al b'motai adricheni. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to take me like this gazelle in a very sure-footed manner to the high places of Eretz Yisrael, lamnatzeach b'neginotai, where I will be able to sing songs of praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Wow. Seriously, it is really something, this Navi. It's really an amazing Navi. We have been introduced for the first time to the idea of the fact that the Geula is a long way off for these Nevi'im. It is opened up for them. We will see it again, especially in Zechariah. In other words, this whole new world that we didn't see discussed in the classical Nevi'im that we did now, that we did until now, Slicha, we didn't see the far distant future discussed. The Nevi'im that lived in the time of Chizkiyahu HaMelech told us about Ashur. They were very involved with the Aseret HaShvatim being exiled, being scattered. They were involved with the fact that Yehuda, Malchut Yehuda, was saved from this, but that Bavel was coming, right? And it is only Habakkuk who introduces to us the idea that there is yet a long history after the time of Bavel.
Okay, I'm not sure I understand. They're saying how the trees are not going to give us fruit and the fields are not giving us food. Why is Habakkuk seeing this as a positive?
Because he's saying very clearly, the murmuring lips.
Yeah.
The murmuring lips are saying, ah, if it's getting worse, it means we're getting closer to the better. The idea of Rabbi Akiva, remember the four rabbis that go out and they see a fox coming out of the Beit HaMikdash and they all start crying and he laughs and he says, if this nevuah comes true, that Shualim are coming out of the Beit HaMikdash, destroyed Beit HaMikdash, it means that the nevuah of Zechariah that we will come to Od Yeshvu Zekeinim Uzkeinot Bechutzot Yerushalayim, there will be old people like me sitting. He was right, sitting in Yerushalayim. He was right, and Yeladim Ktanim Mesachakim Bechorvotaha, and little children. In other words, the idea that he is, I'm telling you, he's saying, I'm telling you a new idea. And the new idea is, we have a Kabbalah, and Malbim uses that Kabbalah, except tradition that we accept, that there's going to be tsarot. Unless we deserve it, by the way. Notice that I didn't go into that. But there will be tsarot that will happen as we get closer to the time of redemption. And if indeed the tarot get terrible, it should be understood by us that was at Menucha, Asher Anuach, Yom Tzara. I should be rest. I should calm down. When there is a Yom Tzara, I see that you have your hand. One sec. Because it's a sign that when the night is darkest, the dawn is about to come. Yes, Estelle.
We've had a lot of terrible sorrow. Yeah.
I can't hear you.
I said we've had a lot of terrible sorrow. I mean, the Shoah was really, I mean, awful. I'd like to say that's as bad as it could get. But we haven't had this natural where the produce wasn't coming. So
well, we have that in the Galilee now. Maybe so now we have enough rain. Maybe.
From time to time, we do have droughts.
So then we should be getting.
But you have.
You know, all through, I really truly believe that all through history, all through the centuries, that our people went through some of the most unbelievable experiences. I think that they learned, they sit, they listened to the words of the Nevi'im, and it kept them going. And they said again and again, we're going through tzarot, but we have a promise. And we're here. We
how
are
long
here.
Long after the tzarot is the
Ah, I tell you what, if you get the answer to that, be sure to let me know immediately. You can call me in the middle of the night. It's okay. Yes, Doug.
I don't remember who said it. I don't know, running, but the Kabbalah of Mashiach, the time before Mashiach, is so bad. They said, I don't want to be there. I don't want to be there in this. It's just so terrible. I don't want to be there before Mashiach.
It may very well be. I don't remember, but it may very well be. The Chevle Mashiach will be very terrible. Okay? Yes. Okay.
We think on Shabbos, Chevle Mashiach, it's so little rough. We should be
Chevle Mashiach, yes. Pedu Teinu Tatzmiach V'nas Yagon v'anacha. That's exactly it. V'nas yagon. It's going to flee away. Yagon v'anacha will flee. Okay, my friends. So here we are. We have finished Chavakuk. It was heavy. There's no question about it. It's very heavy. Sefanya is heavy as well. I want to begin. Of course, will be an introduction. But the introduction before the introduction will be that we read the first pasuk. Okay? I'm sorry, Renny, I owe you. Dvar Hashem asher haya el Tzefanya. The word of Hashem that came, haya el Tzefanya, ben Kushi, ben Gedalia, ben Amaria, ben Chizkiah.
Didn't go to Yaakov.
Yes, didn't go all the way back. So the word of Hashem that came to Sefanya ben Kushi, how many generations do we have? Ben Kushi, ben Gedalia, ben Amaria, ben Chizkiah.
Four
generations. Bimei Yoshiyahu ben Amon Melech Yehuda. The last two Nevi'im that we had did not tell us anything about who the king was. Remember, we learned that it was probably during the time of the very evil Menashe, and they didn't want to date themselves with any connection to Menashe's time.
So Tzefanya is a Nevi to the king? Is Tzefanya a Nevi to the king?
No, not necessarily. I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying. Give me a minute, okay? Tzefanya is during the time of Yoshiyahu. So now you have to remember a little teensy bit of history. Remember Yoshiyahu. During the time, remember Yoshiyahu. Okay, no, we're going to review Yoshiyahu. Remember Chizkiyahu. Chizkiyahu, the kings during his time were Micha, Yeshayahu, Hosea, and Amos. A lot of kings during the time of Chizkiyahu. Chizkiyahu was a melech tzaddik who did not want to have a child, remember, because he got a nevuah that he was going to have a very evil child. The Navi Yeshayahu came to him and said, you know, you're not doing what you have to do. You're the king. You carry the seed of David HaMelech, and you must have a child. And he said, but Yeshayahu, I'm going to have an evil son. Remember? Mm-hmm. And Yeshayahu said to him, look, you can't play God. You have to do what you do, and a Kadosh Baruch Hu will do what he does. And remember Chizkiyahu said, okay, you give me your daughter as a wife, and then maybe your zechut and my zechut together will nullify, change the decree. And Yeshayahu said to him, the decree has already been made. And the famous statement of Chizkiyahu, kach melum dani mi beit avi abba, I always remember that. This is what I learned from my father's 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 house. meaning this is what I learned from David himself. Afilu cherev chada, even if a sharp sword is lying on a person's neck, you cannot, you have no right to desist from tefillah. In other words, even if a decree is like mamash right there, then you still have to keep hoping, you have to do everything humanly possible to avert the decree, and you have to keep davening. It's like this whole lesson in life, you know, because we know that it didn't work. And yet, that hopeful statement stands forever in the Gemara and the Agadita. It stands there, it shines forever. No matter what, it's a lesson. But unfortunately, this Chizkiyahu did have an evil son. His name was Menashe. He ruled for a very long time, 52 years. 55, slicha.
Oh, yeah, according to
the census. No. I made a mistake. And he was a very evil king. Basically, he brought a huge amount of Avodah Zarah. He actually brought Avodah Zarah into the Beit HaMikdash itself. He is considered, he's one of the four kings that lost their chelek in Olam Haba, according to the Gemara, Sanhedrin, last perek. One of the four kings that did lose their chelek, though there is an opinion that he didn't, because he did a short-lived tshuva. But at any rate, he was very evil himself, and he had an evil son. The evil son was Amon. And this Amon, fortunately, only ruled for 2 years. And it would seem that there was a groundswell movement of the people. He just, his Avodah Zarah and all of his debaucheries were just too much even for the person in the street. And there was a rebellion from the bottom, in other words, from the common people, because it would seem that there was a brilliant idea on the part of some of the officers to finally get rid of the scion of the house of David and make a new king, the way it had been done in Malchut Yisrael over and over again, where there was rebellion after rebellion. And so there was an assassination. In other words, Amon was assassinated. That's why he only ruled 2 years. He was quite young. And the people, however, would not accept whoever they wanted. The officers wanted to make king, but they did accept this little boy. His name was Yoshiyahu. He was 8 years old, or maybe seven. I would have to look again. And he became king. Yoshiyahu became king. And Yoshiyahu was an extremely interesting person. He ruled for 31 years. And when he died, it was roughly 22 years, roughly 22, 23 years before the Churban itself. So we're getting very, very close to the Churban. That's background. That's background one. Background two is, you want to say to me, well, why did you read the first pasuk before you went into this whole harangue of what happened between Chizkiyahu and Yoshiyahu? Well, the reason I read the first pasuk is because there is a supposition that I thought was very interesting that the Malbim mentions, which is that Tzefanya is the only Navi for whom we are given four generations. All the other Nevi'im, Chazon, Yeshayahu, Ben Amos, Asher Chazah, Al Yehuda, his father's name, right? Divrei Yirmiyahu, Ben Chilkiah. Right? I mean, Akohanim, Asher Ba'anatot. In other words, one generation, we have four, Ben Kushi, Ben Gedaliah, Ben Amaria, Ben Chizkiah. And so the Malbim says that one of the reasons it gives us four generations is to show us that the Melech Tzadik Chizkiyahu did not only have that evil son, Menashe, but that he had another child who later, three generations later, produced a Navi. So in other words, he did have some children who were tzaddikim and who carried on his heritage. And so this is the supposition that he is a descendant of the royal house, Zephaniah. That's why it was interesting, Marcel, that you asked if he was a Navi to the king. He was a scion of the royal house, which is interesting. We learn elsewhere that there were three prophets. I deliberately didn't put it in Ivrit, because in Ivrit you have to use sex, gender. There were three prophets at the time of Yoshiyahu. Yirmiyahu, who was Menachonim, Zephaniah, who's from the royal house, we just learned, and Huldah, who is a woman, and Chazal say that the women of the generation needed to have their own leader. Interesting? A scion of the Kohanim, a scion of the royal house, and a woman. Yes, Marcel? Okay, I know, Estelle, I've seen your hand.
So, how did Menashe deserve to rule so long?
That's the other question, that if you get the answer, even if it's in the middle of the night, I'm asking you to please let me know. Okay, you may call me anytime. It's as though, please remember that a Kaddish Baruch Hu, when we read Erech Apayim, it has to really jiggle in. Because you know what it means? Sometimes, you know, we always think Erech Apayim, isn't that nice? Slow to anger, right? We think slow to anger is somebody not like me. Because I get angry, boom, right? Other people, it's nice. You ever notice people have self-control? It's so pleasant. And they don't get angry and they speak nicely, right? But slow to anger, it really also means that you wait, you don't react. And when it says HaKadosh Baruch Hu is slow to anger, remember we learned that with Nachum. He didn't punish Nineveh until...
It happened in the
Pasha,
with Mitzrayim.
With Mitzrayim, exactly.
Until after
10 Makot, right?
But Makot started already because his last decree was not giving them straw. And that was like the
last straw was not giving them straw. But at any rate, yes. In other words, that's the slow to anger aspect. Hashem is waiting for what Menashe will do. He's giving him, even though, of course, we know HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows everything. But the person doesn't know everything. And he's being given a chance.
Did he get some support from his father?
Oh, I'm sure. I am absolutely sure. This Yoshiyahu is very interesting. And I couldn't decide if we should read from Malachim and from Divrei Hayamim, but I thought it would really be heavy. There's so much about Yoshiyahu that we would get totally involved in what was going on there. So we're going to do it very simply. We're going to do it outline form. I will tell you, you can divide Yoshiyahu's life. This is a very interesting division that was done by the Mossad Rav Kook, I just Xeroxed the page, into Yoshiyahu's first 8 years. Remember, he was a child when he became king, and he was still young, and it is difficult to know who was his regent. You're thinking of Yoash, not... We get mixed up, the names are also similar, between Yoash and Yoshiyahu. Both of them were child kings. With Yehoash, he had the Kohen Gadol. Which was amazing. He had the Kohen,
didn't he?
Hmm?
He hid him.
His wife and he, right? It was Yehosheva. Anyway, the wife and he, Yehoyada, the Kohen Yehoyada, he hid him. But with Yoshiyahu, it's an entirely different story. He was still young, but he had to be under some influence. Please remember that there were Nevi'im at this time. Remember Rav Yoel Ben Nun's theory that Nachum and Habakkuk were very much influenced by the school of Yeshayahu HaNavi. So there was Nevuah that was being given at his time, and essentially the first 8 years he's growing up. We have then, when he's 8 years old, in which there is a pasuk in Divrei Hayamim that teaches us, Uvishmona Shanim Lamalcho, and when he had ruled for 8 years, Vuhu Odenu Na'ar, and he was yet a lad, Hechel Lidrosh Leloke David Aviv. He began to seek out the God of David, his father. That means when he was 16 years old, because 8 and 8, he's 16 years old, he is ruling, and he began to seek out the God of his David, his father. It is not yet the time of Yirmiyahu. The time of Yirmiyahu is in his 13th year. So even before he came under the influence of the Navi Yirmiyahu, and he and Yirmiyahu were very, very close. He was Yirmiyahu's boy. So that was in the 13th year. But he did begin seeking out Hashem. And then we have the years between the 12th year of his rule and the 18th year of his rule, when as a result of Yirmiyahu's influence and of his learning, he began to clean Yerushalayim and the Beit HaMikdash of all of the Avodah Zarah that his father Amon and his grandfather Menashe had spread through the entire kingdom, including into parts of Malchut Yisrael. Because if you remember historically, at this time, there were some remnants of the 10 tribes that were brought back by Yirmiyahu. Remember, Yirmiyahu was sent out, and he brought back when Huldah actually was consulted, exactly. And so there were some remnants of the Aseret HaShvatim, and Yoshiyahu went on a campaign that was utterly unbelievable, in which he cleaned out everything. The sad thing is that he cleaned out everything on the outside, but the nation was at a point that it was very, very difficult to really affect a full tshuva, and he thought that he was indeed affecting a full tshuva. He thought that all of his efforts, he sent teachers around, he sent soldiers around to examine the houses and to make sure that nobody had Avodah Zarah, but the people were hiding the Avodah Zarah that they were still worshiping. Excuse me? Don't look at the outside. He did send soldiers around. He was very, very anxious to really rid the entire nation of the Avodah Zarah. In the 18th year of his reign, a very interesting thing happened, if you remember. He had commanded the Kohanim and the Levi'im to really clean up the Beit HaMikdash, and they found, remember, Sefer HaTorah Matzati. This is the Chuldah. Yes, it's the Chuldah connection. They found the Sefer Torah, and the Sefer Torah was galul to Parshat, to the Tochecha in Parshat Ki Tavo. And the top of the daf, the top of the Amud, whatever it is, in the Torah, the Dofen of the Torah, was the Hamelech v'chol ha'am, the king and all of the nation, of the Kol ha'am Hamelech Asher Tivchar. I can't remember the exact language, I should have checked it. Slicha. I was relying too much on memory. But it said, the king that you chose, and all of the nation will go out into Galut. And when it was read to Yoshiyahu, the king that you chose, please remember he was chosen by the people. The people insisted that he become king. He thought it was a personal nevuah. He thought it was aimed at him. And that he himself was going to go out into Galut. And he sent a delegation, and the delegation went to Chulda HaNeviah to ask her if it was indeed Slicha appointed message at him. And they went to Chulda, and she told them, yes, this Nebuah is going to happen. I almost made it, did you notice? But because Yoshiyahu did tshuva, it wasn't going to happen in his time. He would come to a normal, to a natural death. But that there would indeed be a churban. It was, at this point, the nevuah was unchangeable. The decree made, there would be a churban. At which point, if you remember, Yoshiyahu took it as a signal that he should even intensify his efforts in the tshuva. If you remember, he hid the Aron. He gave commands to the Levim to open a trapdoor that had been built in the time of Shlomo under Kodesh Kodeshim, and they lowered the Aron into Kodesh Kodeshim. He felt that that was his message, to hide the Aron so that it's waiting for us, my friends. It's someplace.
That's what they're looking for?
Up there. The Aron was never captured. Right? The Bavlim did not take the Aron. There's a whole list of Kelim that they took, and there's no Aron on the list. And if you look at the Arch of Titus, then you will notice they're carrying a menorah and they're carrying all kinds of Kelim, but there's no
Aron.
There was no Aron all the time in Bayit Sheni because it was Ganuz, it was hidden. And then unfortunately, Yoshio did not come to a natural death. It didn't work that way. Why? Because he didn't listen to the Navi and he wanted to play on the world stage. The world stage, this is what we need to know, my friends. This is bringing us now to the history of the times of Tzefania that we need to know. And that was that the star of Ashur was finally beginning to wane. The strength of Ashur, the might of Ashur at this point, was being broken. And the kingdom of Babel got a new king. His name was Nebuchadnezzar. New king. And this Nebuchadnezzar had plans of his own to conquer the world. And there was a major, major battle at Carchemish. Carchemish is like Turkey, you know, go up the Mediterranean. At the time, there is another major player on the stage because Mitzrayim was also at this point very powerful, and they also thought that this was their opportunity. There was going to be a clash of titans between Ashur and Bavel, and meanwhile Paranecho thought that he was going to really make his own position and fortune. And Paranecho, in order to get to Carchemish, you have yourself on a little map. guess where the highway goes?
Right through Eretz
Yisrael, the king's highway, Derech HaMelech, goes through Megiddo. And so Paranacho was marching from Megiddo to Carchemish to join in this major battle, and Yoshiyahu decided to stop him. And Paro sent a message to Yoshiyahu saying, I'm not here to fight with you. I just want to go through. I'm marching through the country. Lo lecha, this is not your battle. I don't want to fight you. And the Navi Yirmiyahu said to him, this is not your battle. But Yoshiyahu made a mistake. He thought that the whole nation had done such a tshuva that they were living in a messianic times. And the Torah tells us that in messianic times, no army would even march through. And he felt that he had to stop them against the word of the Navi. And he harnessed his chariots and he went to war, and he was immediately shot by the archers, to the point where he was immediately killed. He was totally pierced by the arrows, so much so that they had to take him out of his original chariot because there was so much blood, and they didn't want the people to know because they felt it would, you know, give everybody, spoil the morale. They put him in another chariot, and they propped him in the other chariot, took him back to Yerushalayim and buried him. In other words, as though he were alive, he was not. And he was buried in Yerushalayim. Yes, he did come to the grave of his fathers, but it wasn't a natural death. And at that point, Paro kind of became a regent over Yehuda, and then it became between Paro and, guess who, Nebuchadnezzar, a power clash, until, of course, we know that Babel overpowered not only Eretz Yisrael, but Mitzrayim as well, and finally destroyed the Beit HaMikdash. But that's later, 22 years later, that's after three more kings. So that's Yoshiyahu. Chazal say the opinion is that the words of Zephaniah were that Zephaniah gave his nevuah before Yoshiyahu really started all of his reforms, because the land is still very filled with avodah zarah, and he describes what they assume was the country before everything started. The topics will not surprise you at all. The topics in Zephaniah are the sins of Yehuda, the Churban, the inevitable, he says it's going to happen no matter what, and of course calls for tshuva again and again. The thing that's a little bit different is, please, we are learning the Nevi'im now that are later, and so we will get more information about the times afterwards. He speaks more about the concept. We've heard it, but we haven't really totally explored it. The concept of Yom Hashem is mentioned more in Zephaniah than in any other Navi. Yom Hashem is the day that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, judges the nations. Yom Hadin is Yom Hashem. And so the addition in Zephaniah that's a little bit more than perhaps some of the Nevi'im that we have just learned is that some of his words are really aimed at all of the nations in general, though we know he's not talking directly to them, but nevertheless he's talking about the fate of all of the nations.
That's like a repeat then what we have till now with Asher.
Except that it's everybody Yom HaDin in the distant future. Mm-hmm. Distant future. Basically, it's three prakim again. We have three prakim, then we have another three prakim, then we have a slightly longer one. And basically, we will see, once again, a literary construction in which each parak really stands as a unit on its own. Okay? We have 2 minutes. 2 minutes. You want to look at a pasuk?
Yeah.
Okay. A sof, a seif. I'm looking at pasuk bet. Just bet. Remember, Aleph was the introduction, was who he is. A sof, a seif kol. Me'al pnei ha'adama no'um Hashem. There's a pasuk, I believe it's Yirmiyahu, Asof HaSifim. We read it on, is it Tisha B'Av? Haftorah in the morning? I can't remember. It is one of the days, of one of the fast days. Asof HaSifim starts very much the same language. Asof HaSifim, it's all Asof, that doesn't mean I'm gathering them up for anything good. It means everything is going to be destroyed. Asof HaSifim. Lashon Kilayon, Rashi says. The language of destruction. Kilayon, disruption. Destruction. Tchila, says the Malvim, he begins by saying, Sheyesof et kol hanimtza. Everything, not just the Jews. Please notice, I want to, excuse me. That was the cough drop. I want to emphasize that he begins by a universal statement. I'm going to destroy everything. Kol, everything, me'al pnei adama, from the face of the earth. No'om Hashem. These are the words of Hashem. It means direct nevuah. No'om Hashem, right? Words of Hashem. Asef Adam uveheima. I'm going to destroy men and animals. Asef Of Hashemayim udege hayam. I'm going to destroy the birds of the heaven and the fish in the sea. Vahamachashelot et harishaim, and I'm going to put up stumbling blocks for the evil. Vehichrati et haadam me'al pnei haadama. No'am Hashem. Whoa! Yeah. And I am going to destroy all of mankind. The Adam, Adam is mankind. May alpne ha'adama.
Adam is Israel, is Jews, yeah? And Adam.
Adam is Adam Arishon. However, before I let you go. V'natiti et yodi al Yehuda v'al kol yoshvei Yerushalayim. I wanted you to just see that, okay? And while I'm destroying everything, I will specifically stretch my arm over Yehuda and all of the dwellers of Yerushalayim. V'hichrati min hamakom hazeh et Sha'ar HaBa'al. Here we go. And I'm going to destroy from this place all the remnants of the idol worship. So we start at the time of Yoshiyahu, when there are still idols all over. There's a lot of idol worship that's going on. And basically what the Navi Tzefanya I left something out. Shoot. What the Navi Tzefanya is seeing is destruction. He is seeing temporary, local, timely destruction, meaning Churban Yehuda, but he is also seeing way to what he is going to call the Yom Hashem, in which all mankind, Adam, is going to be judged. Yes, Marcia?
I was confused about something, but you really gave
me. Okay. And so the thing that I left out was that notice the name Tzefanya comes from Tzafun, hidden. And one of the things that Chazal say is that Yirmiyahu spoke in the courtyard of the Beit HaMikdash. He was very public, he was very open. Chulda spoke specifically to the women, and Tzefanya was very hidden. He was very quiet. He mainly had his message quietly, and he later wrote it down. So it's quite interesting where he is not a public figure the way Yirmiyahu is. At any rate, Bezrat Hashem, next week we will forge ahead valiantly. Have a wonderful week.
Doesn't this contradict what was promised to Noah? Even though he's not really flooding the country.
But he doesn't say flooding.
No, he doesn't. But he said he won't destroy the world again.
He's by flood. By flood. Good?
Yes.
No, I'm sorry.
By flood.
Girl, the history of the king online.
Like Yoshiyahu, sure.
I can get, okay, so
sure. It's
it is, okay.
Fabulous.
This is like the best way to learn history.
Yeah. Whoa.